All right, we're ready for the next talk. We've got Kian Butler, who's going to talk to us about the building performance critical Python tools with Rust. So thank you.
So so I'm here to talk about Rust in Python. We at Cloudsmith, we are a package management company, so we download lots of bytes. Everything goes through our core monolith, which is a Django app, which works for a lot of the cases. But we process 110 million API requests a day, give or take a weekend or not, which equates to several petabytes of requests. When we don't have a cache hit on a request, we have to send that back to our monolith. So that basically means everything goes through a Python application, which is slow, because our Python application was written 10 years ago, before Python had very fancy async stuff, and it starts to show how slow it is over time. So to scale our Python application, we had to take some interesting design choices, and we started putting services in front of it. So we use Nginx for some basic validation. We use HAProxy for some queuing and some routing of stuff. And then we use uWhiskey for actually sending it off to our Django app. As you can imagine, it's pretty hellish to look at a request if you're using something like tracing and say, where was this request slow? What was it doing? We also found that uWhiskey was basically a black box for us. There was no data coming in or out of it. We couldn't tell why a request was blocked in there, what was it doing, or if there was just anything wrong with it. We needed to look at, we just started throwing hardware at it and saying, okay, we'll need to just add more nodes, more replicas to handle more requests. This unsurprisingly gets expensive, and money isn't infinite is the long and short of that one. So we wanted to look at how could we make this faster and what could we do to help out. Of course, there's no chance we're ever going to do a full rewrite of our code base. It's 10-year-old, it's custom business logic mixed with protocol logic for 36 different package formats. And I would like to say we understand it, but it's 10 years old. We have cycled engineers over the last 10 years, so there are edge parts of our code that people go, I don't really know why we set that header, but we set it for a very good reason, because as soon as you unset it, everything explodes. So we were looking for basically easy wins for performance without having to get all of our engineers to learn a new language or restart everything from scratch. As I said, we're processing petabytes of data a day and 100,000 requests for very large companies, so we have to be reliable when we're actually doing this rollout. We can't just throw code at the wall and hope that it improves stuff. I say that, we did do that at times though. So we kind of wanted to approach it with a good methodology of we'll measure it, we'll identify the bottlenecks and look at what's out there that we can start to speed things up. We're not trying to just pull in Rust for the sake of pulling in Rust, because I think it was said in the ClickHouse talk, people like Rust and it's cool, and I'm sure all of you like Rust because you're in a room called the Rust Dev Room. But we're actually looking for ways to just make our code faster. If we found out that we could have done it with C or by rewriting our Python to be more efficient, we wanted to do that as well. We had a long testing timeline for doing this because it was basically just me and I was all I was doing. So a little bit of time for experiments. There we go. And this one. Okay, so we used OpenTelemetry, and we started load testing. We had a set of load tests written in Locust. For those that don't know, Locust is a load testing tool that runs in Python. We managed to not push enough pressure through the Locust load testing to actually stress our system, mainly because we needed to throw more hardware at Locust to make it scale, which then cost more money and more operation time. I didn't have infinite operation time to be spinning up hundreds of thousands of Locust workers to simulate hundreds of thousands of users, so I tried to cheat. We looked at work, which was better. It's written in, I think, C, so it's much better at load testing. But I ran into issues with it in that it was really good at just hitting an endpoint and saying, here's 1,000 requests. And then, but that's not really what a user does. We're not Wikipedia, so people don't just scrape our website and say, I want this page 100,000 times. They go say, I want this package. They then start saying, where is that package? We then break that package up into millions of different bytes and send it to them. So we had very complicated user flows we need to simulate. We found a project called Goose. It's Rust-based, and it's modeled on Locust. So it effectively let us rewrite all of our load tests into Rust and then run them on much cheaper hardware than our previous Locust and push much more requests through it. So we started to actually see our system under stress and get an idea of what was broken and what we could improve on. We found that, unsurprisingly, everything was slow inside the application. It's all business logic. We were waiting on third-party requests to different backends, database load, that kind of stuff. We also just noticed weird slowness. So with uWhiskey, we use a concept called green threads, which is effectively when the Python would wait for I/O, it goes off and picks up another request and starts handling it. But the request that it was waiting on wouldn't be able to restart until the other request finished. So if you had a really quick request come in, that was then just, it could block waiting on a very slow request that came in right after it because it needed to do a very quick database lookup. Unfortunately, we do a lot of database lookups, something we're working on, but we're basically constantly doing database lookups. So long, slow tasks could interrupt and cause insane latency spikes as we're trying to figure out what's happening. We also noticed that a lot of our time with these very slow requests was spent in serialization. So we send back very large JSON and XML payloads. If you've ever looked at, say, the PyPI index file for like what all the packages are, we have to generate that constantly for our users for their private registries. These could be massive serialization costs for us. And then, yeah, we had our complex proxy chain, which we didn't have great visibility into. We have metrics from HAProxy and traces from Nginx, but not the other way around. So we can see how long you sit in HAProxy, and we can see how long your request was between Nginx and our application. And then it's kind of just guessing from there. There wasn't like a thing where we said, oh, look, we're clearly just spending a lot of time in this one database request or anything like that. It was lots of little cuts here and there that we needed to like resolve and fix. So we started looking at a couple different things. The ordering is actually wrong, because I'm going to go through these in different order. I'm going to touch on these tools, Granion, OrJSON, and JSON Schema RS. Each solved different bottlenecks we had that were constantly kind of like being hit. So yeah, I'll go through them all. So OrJSON is a drop-in replacement for JSON serialization in Python. It uses PyOtree under the hood. It's quicker by about 6 to 12 times that of the standard JSON library because it's actually a drop-in replacement more for the Py2 one because it returns bytes rather than strings. but it does cover the vast majority of use cases of it. So we manage Django, being the very handy framework it is, actually just had a plugin that said, do you need to serialize into JSON? You can just switch out into OrJSON. So we switched into that library, and suddenly we were faster. This is also true of our JSON logger. We serialize all of our logs to JSON. That adds up as you're like handling 110 million requests. All that time adds up. So we switched that out for OrJSON. And then we got onto the more annoying part. We call JSON load and JSON dump throughout our code base. And with this one, we had to go through every single call of it and switch it over to JSON load, determine did we need bytes or strings, or could we get away, or what could we get away with. I would like to say that this would have been automatable with some like LLM or something like that, but I never even thought about doing that. I just had a train ride, and I sat down and started hammering through it for 2 hours, and then just hoped the test would catch everything. That's what it looks like. It's very simple. It's basically the exact same interface. I said the type is slightly different. It worked. We only had one issue. One customer noticed we changed it because they were parsing their response with a regex in bash. And one of those, yeah, it was like, you kind of go, what are you doing there that they say that this is broken? We looked and we told them, have you tried JQ? And they said, no, we'll try that. It's also one of the fun little things. OrJSON doesn't have any white space in it, so payloads are ever so slightly smaller, which is nice. Happy little outcome from that one. We then looked at JSON Schema RS, which is for like validating your payloads and stuff like that. This was one where clearly an engineer long before me had found the Rust library and said, let me experiment with this. We were using it in about half the times we were doing schema validation. The other half we were using the Python one. Clearly it worked for us. I just one day changed one import in half of our files and did nothing else and shipped it. I didn't even actually tell anyone I shipped that. I just did it one day in a part of a bug fix, and it worked. And we got some nice improvements, but like I said, I didn't actually test this one because it was so slow, it was so small, and we were already doing it, so I felt no need to actually validate this. Then we got on to the big one, Granion. So Granion is a Tokyo hyper server for Python. It effectively runs a hyper event loop, hyper server that takes in HTTP requests and farms them out to Python workers. It supports ASGI, WSGI, and a custom protocol called RSGI, which I haven't had a chance to experiment with. We use WSGI, so that was pretty good for us. I want to say that like this was just a level of like, I was just Googling. I looked at our request model and said, this looks just like a hyper server. So I literally just Googled hyper for Python, and this was the first thing I found, and then I started reading the code. One of the reasons that was very good for us is it actually replaced everything in our stack. It does TLS termination, it does request queuing, and it does the worker farming out of work. The thing that we wanted was to be able to say we could get more out of our compute. Because all these services ran on the same box, if we could replace it with one thing that does it, we could maybe squeeze some more cycles out of each request in each box. The other reason we were looking at specifically Rust tooling for this one is I'm a Rust developer in a Python shop. I don't enjoy writing Python. I do it because I get paid to do it. There was a willingness that if I found code that needed to be fixed in Rust, I was be told I could fix it, I could help out, I could write features. It also has an active developer who's constantly improving it and making things better for us. So we moved on to it, and we did some load testing. This is just replacing UWhiskey with Granyon. We were able to push 32% more requests through the system, with latency going down for the vast majority of things. This is actually to do with that trace the threading model again, because we weren't getting those random weights. We were actually, each request was going through and living out its life cycle rather than us randomly getting these latency spikes. That's why we kind of started seeing, we believe we saw the weird latency spikes on the P95s, because these are the real P95s rather than the random P95s. So we handled more traffic and we didn't have any errors that we noticed at the time. We then decided we could rip out everything, try with just Granyon and no Nginx, no HAProxy. So, like, that's the problem with the other one. We weren't really testing the queuing, which is a core part of our infrastructure. If we can't queue requests, they get dropped on the floor and then they get redriven, and then we get a thundering problem of like request after request after request that we're not doing work. So when we did that, we actually saw a 2x increase in speed. 2x input in throughput with a 50% reduction in latency. I honestly didn't believe the numbers when I did it, so I had to rerun the test a couple times. So these numbers are over multiple tests and averaged out. But yeah, good numbers, and we were pretty happy. So we begin testing it out in actual environments, real requests and all that kind of stuff. We ran out to staging, everything looked good. We then moved it to our internal environment, everything looked good. We then rolled it out to one region, then onto a next region, and things stopped looking so good. Like I said, I think it was on the final region, things exploded. So I was actually about to go off and have coffee. That's how good I thought it was going to be, that I was like, no, I'm done for a day kind of thing. We exploded the database when we hit the last region, because we waited till the last region was our primary region. And what we didn't know is that we didn't have connection pooling. And I do not know how we could have so many engineers not know we had connection pooling. But for those that don't know, Django 4 and lower doesn't have connection pooling. It just has connection reuse. So every thread had a dedicated connection. And as we spun up more threads, more services, we maxed out our primary database and we couldn't connect to it and everything collapsed. The UWhiskey green threads, because of how it handled the reuse of requests, effectively meant it kind of pretended we have connection pooling. We looked at different ways to figure this out. We tried RDS proxy because we're an Amazon shop and we didn't have time to spin up PG Bouncer. It's not great, so maybe we should try PG Bouncer and see if it's better. We're just waiting for our Django 5 upgrade before we can actually get this rolled out, because there is real connection pooling in that, and we're pretty sure it's going to fix us. So we're not 100% finished with it, but we're ready to go once we get our Django upgrade running. We're still running this in our internal environments. We are testing it, knowing that it's still working for us for our internal traffic. We also ran into some fun with HTTP. I think I was chatting some people about this last night. Nginx is doing something weird to our traffic that fixes it. We have no idea what it is. But package formats are really weird. Like, package managers are really weird. They do weird things constantly that are not exactly the right HTTP. They'll follow Trio 7s to look for packets, to look for packages at different locations, like if you're hosting an S3 or on a different CDN, because you do it yourself. They'll go to that back end and pull it out and say, grand, I've got there's the file. But if you're a Docker layer and you say the body of that Trio 7 is 0, Docker will then look for a body that's 0 at the other end. And if it doesn't have a body at 0, it'll actually still download it, but it will encode it, all the metadata of the image saying that body is 0, which unsurprisingly doesn't work. So we're not It also started randomly. Our ALB had another one where it, because we were sending that body, we only noticed this because the body, we were sending the body wrong, which caused our ALB's health checks to randomly error out. That's why we fixed it and why we corrupted a load of users, Dockers. Yay, I will always be willing to complain about Docker for the, till the end of time. We're gonna fix it in our Edge. We'll just do some magic things. But Hyper was doing things correctly. Nginx does things weirdly. We're not 100% sure. We actually, while doing the RCA for it, discovered we had the exact same bug when we attempted to use Unicorn for instead of uWhiskey. So it's not just Hyper. It seems to be uWhiskey and Nginx just magically make this work. They shouldn't. It also broke our, one of the nice things was we Granium could be run on a user's laptop. uWhiskey, it's really painful to run on a user's laptop. So we switched out our dev environments for Granium, and we got to test things real as we run them in prod. This unfortunately broke all our debuggers. We chatted to the maintainer. He says he's not going to fix it. The reason is the model for the general Python debugger can't connect through the Rust PyoTree running it. There's no real way around this. We just had to switch back to a normal whiskey thing. I have a lot of notes that I'm going to speed through because I think there's a lot of interesting things. We spent a lot of time just tuning it. We got values to match our HA proxy. Workers, backlogs, blah, blah, blah. If you want to talk more about that, I can talk more about that. We then were running it out, and we realized there was no metrics in Granium. Like I said, we needed that visibility, so this is where I actually got that time to start writing metrics. We forked the project. We added in a metrics collector for Prometheus. Because of the way it works, we needed to move metrics across each Python process back to the main Rust process to expose the metrics to the Prometheus server. It works. We got it working. We created a PR. We were super happy. This is the fork we're running internally in our versions. We never got it merged because we only test on Linux and Macs. The maintainer wants Windows support, so he didn't get there. But saying that, on Thursday or Friday, the maintainer took our PR, didn't merge it, but implemented his own one that matches what he wanted, and it's merged in, and it should be in part of the next release. So you can get back pressure metrics, what's happening, how many requests are in flight, how many Python processes, all that stuff. So we'll be switching to this, I think, 2 weeks' time when it ships. So this is what we're running now. Django, we're almost there. I have little time left, so I'm going to speed through. The real win here was the company now has faith in Rust and our ability to use Rust to the point that we're actually rewriting more of our stack into Rust. So what you might think is we go, okay, cool, we'll use PyoTree and ship it to the monolith. No, we're just going to throw out our Python Edge network and rewrite our Edge network in Rust. So we're starting a project now to do all that, but none of that would be possible, and I don't think I would have got sign-off to do that if we hadn't proved that we can do things faster by just these small little improvements in the stack in Rust. It really made that cultural difference, and people had the faith. So, yeah, if you want to use Rust and Python, look for the bottlenecks, the serialization, the I/O, those things, they just are better in Rust. You'll find that the error handling is good comparatively. If you want to do it yourself, use PyoTree. I've done it for small side projects as well. It generates really nice Python. You wrap your code in some decorators, your Rust code in decorators, generate some very simple Python objects that is well typed and easy to use. If you want people to adopt your thing, aim for API compatibility. If it's drop-in, I'll probably just throw it in and see if it breaks my tests. And if it doesn't, I'll ship it. And with 1 minute to spare, that's it. Thank you.
Have we got any questions?
For the recording.
For the video recording?
Just a quick question. Any chance you are going to blog or open source your goose load tests? Because the scientific method you took was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I would. I can't actually open source the tests because they're very specific and there's some stuff in there that if I open source, I would get in a little bit of trouble. But I think just go have a look at it. They have really great examples of how to write tests in the repository. I would recommend it for load testing because you can compile it to a binary and then ship that binary around the world and then simulate load tests from anywhere in the world, which is great when you have a CDN like us and need to actually do end-to-end tests.
I have a non-technical question, maybe a social question. So you said that the maintainer of one of the projects you're upstreaming to, they rewrote your patch?
Yes.
I've seen this a few times. How do you feel? Like, because then you're not maybe a co-author on it.
It was a little like, oh, I wanted to get around to this, but I didn't. It's his project. It's not my project. I was a little sad, but I kind of was like, I want to feature more than I want to be the contributor myself. And I had let it sit there unpatched from his feedback for months. Like, he wants to feature, I want to feature. I didn't have time to finish it. Yeah. That's the unfortunate part of it. You don't know what you can write. It's the first time. It took him maybe like 2 weeks to get back for a review. Yeah. And by that time, my work couldn't give me more time to go back and review the features.
Utilitarian.
Yeah, all right. Exactly.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.